Blog Talk Radio.
The goal, of course, is to be like you, Daywalker. You got the best of both worlds. All our strengths, none of our weaknesses.
Well, maybe I don't see it that way.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, once again and again. Good evening. This is Afronerd D-Bert, a.k.a. the Afronerd. Welcome to yet another fascinating, funky, fun fact edition of The Comic Shop as presented by Afronerd Radio. Folks, it is approximately 6:01 p.m. The time is crucial and is of the essence, so I'm not going to really get into too much music at the beginning. Don't be scared, though. Don't be scared. Feel free to give us a call at 646-915-9620, again, 646-915-9620. But I do need my crew on this ship of intelligentsia, comic book, pulp-flavored intelligentsia. First up, the captain. Captain, where are you? You're needed on the bridge.
Because time is of the essence. Boom.
Yeah. And, of course, the indefatigable, irascible, and irreplaceable Daryl B. And I can't find his clip. Jesus. Let me bring him in. He needs no fancy equipment. There he is. Thank you, Captain.
My plans to take out Jeff Loeb is happening right now.
Uh-oh. You know what? I think there's quite a few people that will probably agree with you. Folks, again, this is The Comic Shop as presented by Afternoon Radio. This is a two-for-one deal. The Comic Shop at 6 p.m. and Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk at 7 p.m. Okay, quickly, I just want to go down the line for what we're going to discuss this evening, gentlemen. We're going to talk about the dismal, unfortunately, the dismal box office thus far on Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. Who would have thunk it? I'm a bit disappointed, but I shied away from this film, gentlemen, for some reason, and I'll explain it, but something, I was really into it. And then something told me, you know what? This is going to be a B movie. This is not going to work. So we're going to talk about that. Men in Black's Barry Sonnenfeld, famed director. Now there's talk in Hollywood that he may be aligning himself up with DC's 60s Silver Age property, Metal Men. So I think that might be pretty interesting. We'll talk about that. Also, as we gear closer to Batman, a.k.a. The Dark Knight Rises, the viral marketing has really been ramped up. So I want to talk more about what's happening on the viral marketing end for this movie. And does anyone on the team believe that this might encroach at Avengers numbers? Before, we wouldn't even think that way. We thought that it's a given. Now I'm not so sure. More Black Panther news. No one has been able to confirm or deny whether this film is actually going to be made. However, more and more actors of note are putting their tickets out. They're pulling their tickets and saying, listen, I would want to do it. Anthony Mackie has put his name out there, and Aldis Hodge has also put his name out there. And if time permits, we may be able to get a chance to actually talk about some favorite comic book reads. Okay, and oh, one more thing before we really get into this, into our festivities. I do want to mention that stay tuned, folks, for next week, because we are expecting a noted author to come through, Mr. Larry Tai. Again, Larry Tai. He has written books on Satchel Paige and also on Black Pullman from the 40s. This time around, he's written a book on one of his heroes and ours, Superman. Actually, a biography on Superman. So this should be a pretty interesting interview. We're expecting him again next week, so stay tuned for that. Okay, gentlemen, first up, Daryl, I want to go to you. What's the deal with Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter? It made about, I think, $16 million this weekend, below expectations, I would think. What's going on?
Well, I told people, at its worst, it would be Van Helsing, where, oh, the concept, okay, this concept's wacky, we'll all laugh at it and think. At its best, it would be like old school Fright Night, you know, where it's so bad it's good, where it will get a cult following and stuff like that. And the problem is, it just failed to resonate with audiences. It has not captured anybody's imagination, you know, and it's truly the first comic book movie this season to truly bomb. You know, not even Ghost Rider bombed this year. You know, there was no takeoff here. You know, $16 million. I don't know how many screens it got released in. Maybe Cap got those numbers. But when I saw $16 million, I was like, hey, it's a great summer. It was a great summer weekend on the Northeast. It was hot as hell. It was sunny. You'd think people would go into the air conditioning and stuff like that. I don't know, man. Look, we were all kind of iffy on the concept to begin with, right? But we thought it may be so wacky that you have to watch the car wreck. It didn't happen. Cap, all yours.
Well, you got to keep in mind, $16.5 million, and also this was a 3D effort, so you're just for that. Forget it. The numbers are even worse. Okay, so they bang you more because it's a 3D movie, as we all know. Now, that being said, I thought the movie had a great concept. But here was my problem, where I backed off 2 weeks ago. All right? First trailer came out, it was an incredible trailer. Then, as they shot the other trailers, I got to see more of how it was shot. Okay, I didn't like the way it was shot. Thought it was shot campy. I didn't like the camera, the everything that they used. I didn't like the fact that they even used 3D for this movie. Because what began to resonate with me was, okay, using 3D because your storyline is weak. And one, of course, to drum up sales because you can get more money. All right? There's nothing there. So you got great concept. Didn't like the way it was shot. And weak storyline. Then the critics turned around and said the same thing that I said come Thursday. That's exactly what they were saying Thursday. Now, I didn't see the movie. I just saw a few trailers. And the critics turned around and said the same exact thing. So, you know, that was good enough for me. I said, they're on the same page with me. I said, I'm not going to see this. They can keep this. Keep it moving. So, you know, pretty much the people probably felt the same way. Back over to you, Desmond.
Yes, you know, again, folks, you're listening to The Comic Shop. We're talking about Seth Graham Smith's latest effort with Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, and Seth Graham Smith is a noted author. Actually, I'm just finding out that Seth is from Rockville Center originally. He's from Rockville Center, New York, so he's a local guy. And he's a pretty young guy also, and he is an accomplished author. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter was a novel first, a movie second. He also has another book called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Repeat that, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And, of course, that book is based on Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. So he's good on the mashup. And I have to give him props for that. I don't mind high concept. It seems like the concept part is good enough to get a Hollywood deal, but then to actually have meat to it. And this is one of those cases that we talk about all the time, gentlemen, where they have these ideas and they don't provide enough meat for the topic in order for it to be treated seriously. I mean, even though it may come up like a really goofy idea with the 16th president of the United States being a vampire hunter, but Abraham Lincoln visually as well as what he represented in history, is a larger-than-life guy. He was a larger-than-life historical figure. You know, you think about the Emancipation Proclamation, the Gettysburg Address, his assassination, the fact that he was killed by an actor. I mean, there's so much there to work with. I mean, when you really go into the man's life, and even, listen, there's books out there that even have hypothesized that about this president's sexuality. So, I mean, he is a larger-than-life figure, historical figure. Why not have him as a vampire hunter? And we're also learning that, you know, he's pictured as a lanky guy with this stovepipe hat. But he was what they're saying now, historical experts are saying, that he really was a physically imposing figure that used to wrestle, that he was handy with an axe. So there's enough gristle there to work with if you treat these properties seriously. That's the issue. Sometimes I think this is it's a matter of these properties being green-lighted. Let's go with the idea, because you're going to walk in. It's a famed thing to be able to walk into a Hollywood executive's office and just pitch an idea. You pitch it, okay, let's run with that. We'll worry about all the other eccentricities, the particulars. We'll worry about the particulars later. And that's what happens. They never treat the property as goofy. I don't care how goofy the idea is. Play it straight. Darryl, you got something to say? I want to mention one more thing when you speak, after you mention your piece. There's one more thing I want to mention about this idea about just what happened during this film. I looked at a review that explains exactly why this thing did not work. I'll get to more specifics. Darryl, go ahead.
All right, but kudos to them not going and using doing a Nazi idea, because, damn, I'm just tired of Nazis, so. You know what? There was more to life that happened beyond World War II. And this is the second, quote-unquote, historical film to fail. Anybody else remember the Edgar Allan Poe movie?
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, it's not been a good summer for historical figures. Back to you.
Yeah, I forgot his name. Was it the guy from the 80s, very popular actor that was in that?
Yeah, Cusack.
Yeah, John Cusack, right.
Yeah, The Raven, it did that one drop too, so.
But wasn't that better reviewed, though?
That was better reviewed. But
that was better reviewed, though.
But audiences did flock to it, so this will make two historical pieces right into the dirt.
Okay, a couple of folks are a stalwart listenership, Stanley Kubrick from the UK, and also see the Pharaoh is also in the house. Stanley says, you got it all wrong. That movie was the true story of Abraham Lincoln. Okay. Although there's some folks out there, I read some piece briefly by the Huffington Post. They're saying that there might be some, that there's less critique from historians about this movie than what you would think. That's I don't even have enough time to even indulge that. But I would suggest and implore to our audience to go ahead and check out the Huffington Post piece from a few days ago that actually expounds on the notion about there's a little bit of stuff, there's some stuff going on in this movie, as goofy as many have put it, that are not making historians cringe the way you think that they would. So that part right there is fascinating. Now, if they went there, maybe if they actually had historians involved in this, I just think that they should have made this film like, okay, this is true. I mean, approach it that way. Don't approach it so goofy. Anyway, Kubrick continues and says, it was a fun movie. Walk in, switch your brain off, and enjoy. Although it did feel like a TV movie in parts, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, if that's what you're talking about. Okay, that's what I thought. There was aspects of this film that did not come off like a silver screen product. He's saying they came off a little bit like a TV movie. Now, what I was talking about before about some of the specifics in this film, if I would implore our listenership once again to go to newsarama.com, excellent website on comic book pulp stuff, newsarama.com, and they have their review on it by Lucas Siegel. And he says, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, absurd fun. So he's kind of like what Stanley was saying, that, you know, you just can't go in there looking at it seriously. Anyway, he says, just quickly, oh, all those famous tales of our 16th U.S. president, reading and writing by candlelight as a boy and young man, giving milk carton speeches in Springfield, the Emancipation Proclamation, Gettysburg Address, and several more famous speeches and deeds alike. And, of course, there's the way he single-handedly stopped the rise of vampires in this country. Yeah, that too. Once you get past the absurdity of the premise of this film, Abraham Lincoln's life has been constantly altered by vampiric presence, from the death of his mother full circle to the death of his son, leading him to train and hunt them down. It is actually quite fun. The absurdity, however, simply can't be overlooked throughout the entire film. What are meant to be touching moments instead turn into hilarious ones. Lines written to show a deep emotional connection instead come off as funny or just plain corny. And historical moments being tied directly to vampires, in parentheses he says, a famous battle in the Civil War, for instance, are just ridiculous. Absurd, that really is the only word for it. But you know what? That's exactly what writer Seth Graham Smith intended. When he was promoting the novel, he told the story of going to a bookstore, seeing lots of Abe Lincoln biographies and lots of vampire novels, and deciding combining the two would be gold and absurd. Turns out he was right on both accounts. All right. You know what? I think this is suffering from the cowboys and aliens disease, or dis-ease. That's what I think is going on. I think some folks just don't – I mean, listen, we read comic books, Daryl. You know, we love this stuff. It doesn't seem silly to me. But when I heard of cowboys and aliens, I already knew what it was going about. You know, the premise was – we talked about this before, obviously – there's this assumption that aliens are going to come down, are going to come down at the moment in history to your liking, which is always the present. But why wouldn't they come 100 years ago or 150 years ago? Why not tell a story where the aliens arrived 150 years too early? That's why you call it Cowboys and Aliens. I thought it was an excellent premise. The average moviegoer, from what I've been reading, said, oh, that just sounds stupid, and they just – scoffed at it. But there's a lot of stupid stuff. We're looking at hobbits. We can believe in hobbits and give them $1 billion, but we can't do the same for cowboys and aliens, and in this case, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Go ahead, Daryl.
Well, it all goes to the part that I constantly say on the show. We deal in fantasy and sci-fi. All right, comics are a big part of fantasy. We deal with sci-fi, you know, and the limits on the imagination are only by the viewer in question. All right, if your imagination is big, who's to say, oh, well, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in the middle of, as a young boy, fell through a time rift, ended up 500 years in the future, and then came back. But he had adventures in the far future. So, like, all you need is a good script. Like the cast says, all you need to do is you could take the most absurd thing. But if you got a quality script to it and you put it with enduring characters that endear themselves to the audience, you know what? You never know. Hell, yo, I often tell people, you know, Titanic was absurd. No, that was a true story. So I'm going to, like the Steve Harvey line says, as the ship was sinking, the plan played on. If the ship starts sinking, we're running out of there, right? We're going to the line. We're not going to sit down and continue playing. You know, going at the end, he lets go and pushes, you live, and he voluntarily sinks. I'm like, no, I'm looking for another piece of driftwood to hang on to. I ain't going to sink like that. You know, it's all in the imagination of the viewer. You could say it's absurd, but if you open up your mind to the possibilities, and remember, You know, National Treasure had the same sort of thing as Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. And I know there's people rolling their eyes right now, but what in National Treasure, what were they talking about? A secret society in the United States involving gold, working behind the scenes to try to overthrow the government. In Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, it's vampires secretly trying to take over the United States for food. Hell, didn't Blade 3 have the same sort of thing with the blood banks? You know, it's all in the imagination of the viewer. But if you're predisposed going in that, oh, I just saw the title, I haven't seen anything about it, this is stupid, I'm not touching it, then you've already closed off your mind. You're not an open thinker. You know? Cap can attest to that. We know people like that who won't give anything a chance just because, all right, you know, this just sounds dumb to me. You know? And to be fair, the movie has its moments. But at the same time, it's a B movie. It's a movie for all of us that love the old toxic adventure, like trauma type good things where it's so bad it's good. This one is going to be a cult hit on, like, what, I won't say video stores, but Netflix and everything like that. If you have a party and you have a bunch of boys and gals over and you just want something in the background that is just going to make people laugh, you could put this movie in.
All right, Captain, you got some words you wanted to say.
Well, just to add to Darryl's point, but also to separate a few things, all right? It does start with a good screenplay. That's one. That's one thing. You must have a good screenplay. But sometimes even when you have a good screenplay, it will not work. Because you can have a good screenplay and you cannot make that goodness you have in the screenplay translate on the screen. If that was the case, every movie that you would see, you'd be like, oh, it's a 10. Okay? That doesn't happen. That's the reality of it. Some things are just not going to work. Now, we talked about Cowboys and Aliens. I watched Cowboys and Aliens. Movie wasn't good. Movie just wasn't good. Wasn't a good movie. I loved the concept. Concept I thought was good, but it just wasn't a good movie. Didn't work. Maybe they did different actors. Maybe the screenplay was different or something like that. But sometimes, regardless of whatever you do, it's not going to work. That's the reality of it. It doesn't work when it goes out there. And what does that mean, work? People are not going to see it. It just doesn't, you know, vibrate with the people. It doesn't get a reaction, regardless of whatever happens. You know, and that's the reality of it. Back over to you, sir, Alpha Nerd.
Yeah, we're going to go to a quick musical break, folks. Again, this is the Comic Shop. We're almost at the midway point. I do want to mention one thing based on what Darryl was talking about. You know, when Darryl talked about that, you know, we really take these things personal, that we are actively involved in sci-fi and fantasy, so we have a different approach. You know, there's a lot of evidence to show that when you have a fantasy mind or a sci-fi mind, that you have an expanded imagination. And a lot of things come out of a expanded imagination. A lot of the technology and science that we take for granted that occur today and every day. I mean, new science, new technology is being discovered even as we speak. And, you know, I remember listening to Howard Stern a few days ago, and I'm a supporter of Howard Stern, but sometimes he can say something, obviously, that's his business, say something that I felt was a little off the wall. He was poking fun at Erin Gray. Now, for those who know Erin Gray is an actress that played in the The Buck Rogers series from the late 70s. And now she, you know, she's an older actress, and she's appearing at these conventions, and there's a whole kind of comical, lowbrow comical thing of B-level or even C-level actors that end up getting, you know, having to supplement their incomes with getting, you know, cheap autographs, you know, charging $20 or $30 to get their autograph, whatever. And she was interviewed, and he was poking fun because she tried to overindulge, at least in his opinion, overindulge as to the importance of her character. And she went on to say that, you know, she spoke to countless women that were empowered because of her role on on Buck Rogers, and some of them went into the aeronautics field because of her portrayal. And I was a little disturbed by what he thought she was saying, that he really looked at it as if she's just blowing smoke. But then he also has the great George Takei as a intermittent cast member, an intermittent announcer on his show. And George Takei, I mean, it's not just him, but it is very well established that many folks at NASA hold Star Trek in high regard as far as giving them more exposure. And dare I say, having folks to expand a mini, you know, this product's going around right now that were definitely inspired by this 60s TV sci-fi series. So I get a little frazzled with some folks scoff at what some people think is being goofy, but at the same time, that very goofiness might have led to the next cell phone, the next iPad, the next PC, what have you. So you need high concept creative thought in order to get certain technologies and sciences to come forward. So I think it's not something to laugh at. All right, gentlemen, let's go to a quick musical break as promised. When we come back, actually, you know what? I want to go off script a little bit. I saw Black Ronin, our friend Black Ronin, and he wants to talk a little bit about The Legend of Korra, which ended its first season yesterday. Ooh. And it was pretty. It was an hour-long special, courtesy Ooh. Of Nickelodeon, and I loved it. I was enthralled with it. But we got to talk about it. I didn't think about it, but since he brought it up, just for you, Black Ronin, we're going to talk about it. All right, this is Amanda. No, you know what? Forget that. Amp Fiddler, Hey Joe, doing a Jimi Hendrix cover. We'll be back in a few moments. folks, had to pull out the phaser on that one. Again, a great cover by Amp Fiddler, Hey Joe. Hey Joe, of course, is the legendary song by Jimi Hendrix. All right, folks, we're back in full effect. Welcome to the Comic Shop. It's presented by Afternet Radio. We're at the midway point, 6:30 p.m. Stay tuned after this show for Afternet featuring Captain Kirk. Feel free to give us a buzz as well, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. By popular demand, and also because I love the show, Black Ronin mentioned Korra, and I forgot that yesterday was the season ender for the first season. There's supposed to be 26 episodes, so we had the first 12, the end of the first 12 arc from yesterday for The Legend of Korra, which is, of course, the sequel to Avatar The Last Airbender, the Nickelodeon series. What were your thoughts on this, Cat? Let's go to Daryl on this first.
Hey, you know what? It did what a season end is supposed to do, or a hiatus thing. It left everybody with more questions. You know, it did. And you saw the emotional buildup from the first 10 episodes, especially with what's her name, the daughter of one of the heads
of the Equalists.
Yeah, you saw all of that come out. You saw it, and just Korra was left befuddled. You know, they had a victory, which was a big loss in the long run, and it is just. They set themselves up in a real good place in terms of storytelling. You know, this reminded me of in Avatar, the battle at the Northern Water Tribe, right there, where the story could go any number of places from where they left off here. You know, that's how I looked at it. You know, the best thing you can do as an animated series is when you go and take your hiatus, you leave the crowd wanting more. And that's exactly what they did. I looked at the clock. I went an hour's over, but. And that's the best thing for a show like this. Cap?
Well, I didn't get to see it, so I'll pass the mic over to the great Afro Nerd so he can comment. There you have it, sir.
Yeah, you know, I'll get to work on sending you some of the episodes because they really are pretty good. I tell you what I'm curious about. I think, well, first of all, the character you're talking about, I think, is Asami. Asami is the character you're talking about. I mean, there's so much to go. Listen, I love this series. I came late to the first Avatar, but I grew to love it as well. But for some reason, excuse me, I like this one better. I mean, it just fits my taste. It's more modern. It's less feudal. I mentioned this the last show. More steampunk. Although the first series relied heavily on steampunk, but now it's in an urban setting with the steampunk thing. You know, for those who are unfamiliar with the term steampunk, it's a genre of sci-fi, very much in the H.G. Wells way of technology, old world 19th century tech, and that's the vibe that you get. I mean, we see airplanes. You know, we see airplanes, we see cars, but it definitely has an H.G. Wells feel to it. So I like the imaginative, creative process with the development of the series. I guess I have to kind of dovetail on what Daryl said, that it did what it was supposed to do. It was an excellent first arc, a lot of emotionalism for a cartoon. You know, very heavy stuff. A lot of, you know, a lot of feeling, a lot of pathos. A lot of stuff going on. I have to give kudos, man. They really know what they're doing. I guess the one thing that is a drawback and not about the series really is, will this get the just due for a live-action interpolation? Because because I think they're still going to go into the first Avatar with Aang. I mean, you know, now they went into a whole different mythos. I mean, you could have... I'm assuming they're going to stick with the first Avatar, you know, for the film. But I like this one, you know. I mean, we probably won't if they ever go into this well, it won't be for another 10 years because they got to get past the first Avatar to get to this one.
And that's the other thing here, too. You're seeing it. Everybody, Cora is transparent as all hell. She has no secrets. But everybody around Cora has secrets, has things they are not saying, and you could see it. It's building up, and when all of those explode at once, look out. It'll fracture the team apart, as if the last episode didn't fracture the team apart more. But you know, one of the main undercurrents of this is that the Avatar usually has to go through some big loss. You know, something that's heartbreaking, something that makes them question if they're right for the role or not. We all thought it was her failure to airbend consistently. I don't think so. I think someone in the group is scheduled to be, taken out.
I admit that too. I have that feeling too.
Yeah, I think that is.
Someone's going to have to move. It's unfortunate. That's just the way, you know, that's just the way the dramas work. But, again, folks, it's kudos. You know, if you're not checking out The Legend of Korra, but I think we spoke about this before, it's actually doing very well in the ratings. So it's going to be around for a while. Right now we know that season two is forthcoming. Will we see beyond the fourth season? I mean, the first Avatar lasted, what, 3 seasons, I believe?
Yeah, 3 seasons stretched out, and it lasted 5 years on TV because of how they stretched it out. But the thing is, the way they stretched it out, you know, that's when Nick is doing a great job compared to Disney XD and Cartoon Network. You know, they don't play these bait-and-switch games with the programming. They go like, okay, we're going to show you this run. We're going to show it to you weekly, bap, 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 consistently, and then we're going to take our break, all right? We'll do a couple marathons of it in the meantime and stuff, and then we'll come with the next set. There's no bait-and-switch. There's no, all right, we're going to put this episode on, and at the last minute, we're going to switch the episode. Nickelodeon knows that when they put out a show, people get hooked on it. If people get hooked on it right away, we are going to give the audience what they want. We ain't going to play games with them. You hear that, Marvel XD? Yeah. Hear that, freaking Cartoon Network? Oh, excuse me, Disney XD. But, you know, no bait and switch. No cutting off stuff in the middle of the storylines. No repeats placed right when people are waiting for the next show. None of that. The Nickelodeon gives the viewers what they want, and they treat us like we know what we want to watch. God,
okay,
I'm still mad about the Avengers thing, by the way.
Yeah. Well, let's do a quick turnaround, actually. I see that Black Ronin was asking questions about Young Justice and Thundercats. No new episodes this weekend. That's correct. I think there's some new episodes forthcoming, though. Correct? I still think there's some new stuff coming down because Young Justice has quite a few episodes that have not been shown.
Yeah.
I think there's like 20 total, and we're not even anywhere near that.
No, we're to like eight Young Justice Invasion episodes have shown, so we still got 12 of that remaining. And Thundercats, I think Thundercats pretty much is done with their season, because the last fresh episode, you had the big fight versus Mumra and the races united and all of that. So I think their season arc is done. All right, and this week the freaking Disney XD finally got around to continuing the freaking Avengers season, you know, with Nightmare in Red. So hopefully they could show straight through, you know. But folks out there, there are sites out there where you have seen the next 6 episodes already while they've been sitting on their hands, idiots.
All right, transition time. I want to talk about this this rumor that might be confirmed, that the legendary director Barry Sonnenfeld, who many know for his Men in Black involvement, the Men in Black franchise, that now, because of Green Lantern's flopped-out box office and Chris Nolan willing to walk away, at least he's saying that this is the last way to go for The Dark Knight, that DC and Warner Brothers are mining for new property. So there's talk that the Silver Age 60s Metal Men characters may be the next new hot property to go into. Now, to our listening audience, for those who may be unfamiliar with the Metal Men, it's pretty self-explanatory. We're talking about AI robots from the 60s that were created by a scientist by the name of Dr. William Magnus. And they represent different minerals. They represent gold, iron, lead, mercury, tin, and platinum. And each character has their own personality. And, you know, as far as comedy, you know, I guess, you know, if they're able to pull this off and make it look the way that it's supposed to look with these full-functioning, artificially intelligent robots, because they come and go. I mean, we've seen them on television here and there. They've never been able to get their own series. But I think with what – I mean, this is something that definitely fits with Barry Sonnenfeld's sensibilities. I can actually see him doing this.
Yeah, it's the right tone.
I think it is interesting. I think it is interesting. Maybe you know, they're not household names. It might work. You know, any thoughts on this, Darryl?
You know, it's the right tone. It's the right thing. If you've seen Men in Black, right? The humor and the seriousness, you know, with the way they switched off between the two. If you that's the tone, honestly, of a Metal Man comic book. You know, that's the tone, because you have the characters in fighting with one another. They're facing weird menaces, usually scientific. You know, you have points where you laugh. You have points where you scratch your head. But at the end, you're entertained. So, you know what? This is actually, if it's true, this is actually a good idea by DC and Warner Brothers with this one.
Yeah, I think it would actually work. I'm wondering if will it be I'm assuming it's going to be live action. I don't think it's going to be animated or, you know, semi-animated. It's probably going to be, I guess, in the same fold as Men in Black, I would think. So hearing him involved in it, I think it might work. But I mean, listen, they're really going in deep. But you know, they will green light this. I mean, again, we're talking about a different. You know where I'm going to go with this. They're going to green light this, and yet we have to speculate on Black Panther. Why would, you know, no one has yet confirmed this thing. This is a no-brainer. I mean, I would really have a hard time not seeing Black Panther in the next Avengers. I would almost think it's impossible. I mean, well, it's possible, but no one's talked about this, but Darryl, do you think there's going to be any? Have you gotten any inclinations that they will expand the roster the second go around?
They should, because Thanos is that big of a threat. They should expand the roster. But to all the Black Panther fans out there, we know a lot that listen to the show and everything. Let me just tell you, down the line, in about 3 weeks, again, if Avengers Earth-wise Heroes keep showing the new episodes, you are really going to want to watch the Black Panther parts coming up. I'll just say that truthfully, because he once again proves that he is thinking like 10 steps ahead of any hero in the Marvel Universe, and I'm surprised that they animated him that way, just because, you know what, that's how I would want him in the movie. Like, all right, I'm a member of the Avengers, but at the same time, Wakanda is my country, okay? You ain't bringing your funny stuff here, all right? And how could I trust any one of you with what's going on? You know, think it right ahead. Go like, hey, I don't know which one of you is real. I don't know which one of you is fake. I'm going to take everybody out. That's it. Simple as that. The problem will be solved, and none of you is stuck a foot in here. That's how I think the movie should be. You know what? there's a big world out there. That's great. You know what? Wakanda is my piece of paradise. You guys, back, get a step in. Back off. All right? I'm not letting you bring all of that freaking foolish stuff from the outside world within our borders. Ted, the question is Hollywood, would Hollywood make such a strong black character be the lead in a comic book movie? I know Cap's got an opinion about that one.
Well, when it comes to Avengers, there's really not any wrong that they really can do at this given point. I'm not so sure about far as the individual Black Panther movie, but putting them in the Avengers movie, it doesn't take away, definitely. And all they have to do is just follow his storyline, do a little montage, and then there you go. He's in there. They're going to need all the help that they can get against Thanos if necessary. So it's real easy as far as that's concerned. But as far as his own singular movie, that's a whole different story. You see which way, which direction that they're going to go with that. Hopefully, if it does take place, they don't decide to mess the character up because there might be riots in the streets. You understand behind that, you know, but as far as the Avengers are concerned, they really can't do any wrong. Back over to you, D-Bird.
Yeah, somebody get Christopher Priest on speed dial to write this damn thing. Please, someone just get Christopher. No Reggie Hudlin. No freaking most dangerous man alive on Daredevil's territory. No. Hey, Christopher Priest, please, for the love of God, have script approval on this.
Yeah, one thing, you know, obviously we've segued into the Black Panther thing. And we spoke about this for the last couple of weeks, and now we're getting into it again because of some high-profile actors are putting their names out there. I mentioned that Anthony Mackie, he's pretty well known. He's definitely the go-to guy right now. He was in The Hurt Locker. He was in 8 Mile. He played Tupac Shakur in Notorious. So he was in the Adjustment Bureau. I mean, he's been on, and he's also in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. So he's getting a lot of work right now. Hey, listen, I'm very particular about this character. I mean, I really want this to be done the right way. I want him to get the Batman treatment. I don't know if they will do that, but what Daryl says is very correct. I mean, you need for it to really be done the right way. Heck, even when during the Christopher Priest run, and again to our listening audience, if you want to get the quintessential Black Panther trade paperback run, I would get all of them. But the first one I would get, even though you're not really going in succession, I would get the Christopher Priest run, because he's the one that really brought out that character's importance and heft. You know, when he came out in 1966 with the Fantastic Four, he was a heavy-duty character, and he gave him a lot of props. For 1966, he really gave us his due. He literally bested the Fantastic Four by himself. So he was not someone to play around with. But, and I think we have a caller. Call, we'll get to you in 1 second. But at some point, when he joined the Avengers, he was like this sideline guy with a cool costume. They never really made him a threat. You didn't know how this guy, and this guy, even then, it was noted, he was the ruler of his country. And that Wakanda was this highly technological advanced nation in Africa. We have to see that, and the actor has to be larger than life as well. And I'm even into the guy's height. Anthony Mackie's 5'10". This other guy that they've mentioned, I've seen him around as well. He is a TV actor. I think he has some chops as well. The only thing is Anthony Mackie has done a lot of work, so I have a suspicion he might be a guy. He's young enough to do it, you know. But I want a physically imposing guy to really do this thing. I mean, but I tell you, there's a lot of actors that really are saying, hey, I will do it. But I want to see somebody get the, you know, go through the Chris Evans physical extreme test. You're going to, you know, I don't want to see some skinny guy in a costume looking silly. It's got to be done the right way. Now we have a call. Let's open up the lines and see what's up. If I can get it to work. 916, welcome to the comic shop. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, it's Big Sexy and Fat calling from Sacramento again.
Hey, what's
How
up,
you doing,
man?
Sick?
Hey, what's going on, guys? And I wanted to just talk about the Black Panther, because you mentioned the Most Dangerous Man Alive storyline. Now, to me, and I think I'm in agreement with you guys, that storyline was some bullshit. And the only thing it did was lessen the Kingpin and the Black Panther, did nothing for either one of those characters. And I've been a fan of the Black Panther since he first appeared in Avengers in issue 52. And I remember back in the early 70s, they stopped calling him Black Panther because Marvel wanted to distance him from the political group. They actually called him the Coal Leopard or the Black Leopard at one time, which I thought was silly. But I agree with everything else that's been said here. Christopher Priest needs to come in and take this character and treat it properly and make him physically imposing, like Chris Evans, like my man who did Wolverine, Hugh Jackman. You need that physical imposition. You need a big man who can act to play this type of character. But other than that, I just want to chime in, say how you guys doing, and just keep up the great work.
Well, thank you, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, it's not that we're saying we don't trust Hollywood, but we don't trust Hollywood. You know, because like I was saying, Black Panther is such high concept, all right? It on the surface, it's so easy to fall into the stereotypes here. You need someone who could pay reverence to the character. And hell, in the movie I give a line about the devil gave me his pants, you know, that'd be a sugar on top. But at the same time, and that's for Black Panther fans out there, Mephisto, and long story, but it was a great moment that made everybody chuckle. You need to set up Wakanda. You need to set up T'Chaka and T'Challa and their relationship and why the Black Panther is a revered character. You need to do a bit of storytelling here. You need to do a bit of world building here. And the problem is with Marvel, unless the character is a big character, you know, it may get the Blade 3 treatment where there's a lengthy history and they skip out on it. And I don't want to see them do that to the Black Panther.
Well, you know something else. I don't think we actually covered this on the show. I think was it you, Daryl, or it might have been Captain? I got an email that said that they're looking to do a Wonder Woman movie, and that the same scribe for Green Lantern is doing the Wonder Woman movie. I'm saying, you know what? Brian Azzarello here. I'm to the point now where I'm going to say, listen, I'm going to write a letter. I mean, who am I? But we can't allow this. You can't keep on, you know, Marvel, for whatever it is, Marvel seems to know what they're doing to a certain degree. That's why I'm going to give Marvel the benefit of the doubt. But DC, do you give the guy the reins from an already established flop, which was all about story, to do the Wonder, are we going to give him one? It makes no sense. Azzarello seems to have a good hold of the character right now. I feel comfortable with him if they're going to give him the scribe treatment. The guy that screwed up the reason why you can't get off the ground now is because of Green Lantern. Now you're going to give that guy more work to screw up? It makes no sense. That's not the same thing. Now, I hope Marvel, no, you know, Marvel is not DC, but let's give, I mean, it would be really hard to believe, because actually in reading the Christopher Priest run of the Black Panther, it gave you very much a silver screen vibe, because even Everett Ross, the character Everett Ross, that was more or less the liaison between Wakanda and the United States, he physically was drawn to look like Michael J. Fox. And I remember that 10 years ago. I said, "What?" That's when I first noticed it, just like we saw, wow, this ultimate line of this ultimate universe has Nick Fury looking a whole lot like Sam Jackson. I had the same feeling when I saw Everett Ross that looked like, now Michael J. Fox, unfortunately, you know, he's kind of out of it because of his Parkinson's. But I could see Michael J. Fox in the role of Everett Ross. I can envision it. So when they started tapping into that, the way it was drawn, it was ready for movie treatment 10 years ago. So
the whole question is, and this is where DC, and the joke is DC had Josh Whedon on the Wonder Woman movie. They had Josh Whedon, and they couldn't get that together. And Josh, of course, goes over to do Avengers. When you're doing a comic book property now, are you solidly behind it? Because we said it on the show. Cap has said it a million times. The average moviegoer will not stand for crap now when it comes to comic book movies. It has to be intelligent. It can't talk down to the crowd. And you have to identify with the hero or even with the villain. It has to be enthralling, you know? And right now, with the game DC's playing with their heroes, you know, when it comes to the movie treatments, it turns off their fan base before you even see a trailer.
Well, you know what? Listen, you know what I thought about? I mean, listen. We know what the reality is. It really is Jaimin Hensel's role. He is the Black Panther, in my estimation, and he even did the voice acting for the stop action cartoon, which is available on DVD. He is the Black Panther. I think to really do it the right way, have him in the suit as T'Chaka, and he ends up getting killed. Then you have the number two coming in. That's the way you're going to have to do it in order for me to feel like you approach it seriously. Gentlemen, we got about 2 minutes. Any last thoughts to give to our audience before we move along? Go next door to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk.
Well, a reminder, Fallen Skies tonight, the first two episodes were kind of cool. So they've hit their stride. And I can't believe I'm saying it. The more commercials I see for Wreck-It Ralph and trailers for that, That's gonna be the next freaking mastermind slash freaking Incredibles type film, because some of those guest appearances by video game characters, the 80s little boy in me is going nuts watching it. Cap.
Well, I have no closing words. I think you summed it up very good.
Okay, gentlemen. As always, to our audience, Big Sexy out there, we appreciate the support, man, as well as our regular listenership. We'll do it again next week. Also, remind to our audience, we have Larry Tye coming through as our guest to discuss his book on Superman. He has a Superman bio, very interesting book. He's also was on NPR recently. So Larry Tye is slated to come through next week to talk about Superman, Schuster, Siegel. It's going to be a big show. And, of course, we have Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk up next. It's an absolute pleasure. See you guys next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Black people say that so-and-so set us two steps back. Now, just to see how far back black people are right now, we got a chart provided by the American Black Progress Association. Now, let's check out the chart. Now, you also hear black people say that we're almost there. Well, as of today, there is 3,653 steps away. Now, every time we've made strides, we've been upset by missteps. You know, in 1960, SNCC and CORE stayed sit-ins. It's a great time for black people. You know, putting up a head, four steps, one, two, three, four. But in 1988, the Crips and Bloods stayed shootouts. putting black people six steps back and 6 feet under. Hey, now what happened? Roots comes on, gives black people a sense of pride. 5 steps forward. And Roots begins a trend of names, of African names, beginning with Kizzy and Kuta and ending with Sucretia Beyonce. 11 steps back. 11 steps back. Beyonce. Come on. What else happened? Mae Jameson, the first black woman to go out of space, blasts up 15 steps ahead. Well, then Little Kim, the first black woman with a kitty out, let us love it. 42
We are gathered here today to issue this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail fucking lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerve Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerve.
Welcome once again, folks. We're giving you a full platter. First up, we had, of course, the great Daryl B. on the Comic Shop. Now you're listening to After featuring Captain Kirk. The time is 7.02 p.m. And we have just, listen, we have more information, more edutainment. We do what we do. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Unabashedly, folks, we're going to be all over the place in subject matter. So just deal with it. You'll enjoy it, I'm pretty sure. Nevertheless, you know, one of the hallmarks of our show, we always play good music, at least we think so, the best in urban alternative music. This is Joe McBride with his cover of CeeLo's Crazy. We'll be back in a few moments, and you know what to do. You got to groove. We'll be right back.
Y'all think I'm crazy? Must be crazy. Be crazy. Got to be crazy. Here we go. I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that thing. Even your emotions have an echo in empty space. Yeah, I was out there, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. The time of your life.
right. Joe McBride. Crazy. CeeLo's cover. All right, folks, we're back once again, 7.05 p.m. I could not do the broadcast, certainly could not do it, without my partner in a white-collar crime, Captain Kirk. Captain, you're needed.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
For those particular individuals that may suffer from progressive myopia, aka nearsightedness, you might not be able to see eye to eye with Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. That being said, the great Afro Nerd this evening will elucidate on how he became the person that he is, why he has the thoughts that he has. It should be great. It should be entertaining. Back over to you, Afro Nerd. Drop the sign.
Thank you, sir. Actually, I thought you were going to go into a diatribe, but I can go into mine. You want me to go first?
No, I give you the floor. I'll save mine for another time.
All right. All right. Behind the scenes, I was talking to the great captain, telling him just off the cuff an experience that I had that led me to the road of having a more conservative, dare I say moderate conservative tilt. I was not always this way. I was very much entrenched in radical, progressive blackness, very much entrenched in that, very much into a pro-black mindset. Now, this is not to say that I am not pro-black. I do consider myself pro-black still, but I have to define it in a different context than I did, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Now, one thing that I did tell the captain that I want to share with our audience is that the Oracle, my father, the tangential producer of this program, and a friend of mine, Adrian, dear friend of mine, I've known for a long time. Actually, he was supposed to bring his son, but his son at the time was a toddler. So he didn't want to participate in this thing. We went to the Million Man March, Louis Farrakhan's Million Man March, and it was something that we thought that we needed to do. I remember the Oracle's words like they were just spoken to me yesterday. He said, you know something? Our situation, our relationship is tight. We don't have any father-son issues. We really don't need to do this. We don't need to do this. But since you were not around, you were not even conceived during the first Million Man March in 63. Since you were not around for that, this is going to be a historical event. Let's do this for the sake of history. We don't need to do it, but we should do it because it is a historical event. So we decided to do it. Now, I said, okay, this is going to be big. It was if anyone remembers this event, it was a big thing. All these black men coming together to try to address the dysfunctionalism, to try to raise our heads, to try to straighten out our situation. A couple of things I remember. One, the women. Black women were very adamant about not I don't say all black women, but there was a faction of black women that were very adamant about being told not to show up, not to participate. On one side, I was like, hey, I love women. I wouldn't mind having a feminine presence. I never do not like a feminine presence. However, I thought they were out of pocket on this one because this was something that, you know, they were crying and they still cry to this day. Black women cry to this day, Captain, that we need our men to start acting like men. Okay, this is the instance, harkening back to this event, this is the instance that we are going to rise. We're going to show our women that we're going to take control. we're going to do what you have asked us to do for decades now. So why are you angry? There's got to be a time where men are able to get together and figure this nonsense out. Okay, so I was a little irritated by that, but we still decided to move forward. If anyone is familiar with Get on the Bus, Spike Lee's film effort, Spike Lee's film, his film cover or film interpretation of the actual event, it was very dead on. You had all these different types of black folk from different areas of the country with different perspectives, different backgrounds coming together. It sounds good on paper, but when it's actually happening, it's a rough road. And I remember, again, this is with my friend Adrian and the Oracle. We're on the bus. We're really psyched because this is an important thing. We were motivated. We never saw so many buses gathering in New York at this one spot. Like I said, what? I didn't know they could make this many buses to go. I mean, this was a big thing. People from California were coming, people from the Midwest, people from down south. It was a big event. On the bus, I remember seeing some, this is before I articulated the notion of lower tier, some young men of color that were constantly going off and on the bus to get high. And I looked at my pop, I looked at Adrian, I said, you mean to tell me that these guys, these young men, considering the importance, I mean, we somehow Farrakhan got you here. That goes to his, at the time especially, it goes to his prowess in being able to motivate black men. He had the power to move black men collectively. We're talking about a million plus. It's been debated, but I was there. There was a million black dudes there, unquestionably. But these young men could not stop the pot smoking for one day, Captain. I just wanted, you can smoke. I was liberal enough in my head. You know what I mean by liberal? I was liberal enough to say, you know what? Smoke your weed tomorrow. But today is so important, so crucial. Can you let it go? Can you give respect for what for the gravity of the situation? They could not do it. They could not even let go of that long enough to deal with the matter at hand. And there were other things that were going on the bus as far as mild disrespects, you know, not really being conciliatory to the next quote unquote brother. You know, if we're in this tribal mode. If we're in this tribal mode, let's go with it to the hilt. Some of them could not even do that. We still could not be brothers, even on the bus. We couldn't stop smoking weed, even on the bus. And I said back then, Farrakhan has a task on his hands. This dysfunctionalism is so embedded. I don't think we're going to be able to uproot ourselves from that. So. There are going to be more stories I can tell you as to how I became what I became, but I started seeing things that led me to believe that we need a harder message, that we have to address the dysfunctionalism, that we're going to have to address this rampant notion of self-defeatism, even during an event that was unquestionably something that was for black men to rise. We still couldn't answer the call, not properly. That's it. That's just one thing that happened to me that led me to the road to having a more conservative message. And I will give you more tidbits. I can think of a few instances in my life where I was definitely that Michael Evans, dashiki wearing, listening to Khalid Muhammad, African medallion wearing guy. On one end of the spectrum, and then slowly, because of lower tierism. I'm going to keep it like keep it 100, Captain. Led me to a different calling. That's it. That's it. Any thoughts, Captain?
Well said. Well said.
All right, listen. Time is of the essence. We only have about 45 minutes, but we can still get to it. We have a lot of things to cover. Just going down the line briefly, I'm going to play this clip in a few moments, actually. I'm a little late on this, although I think that even the internet is starting to buzz about this thing. Dear White People, there's a new trailer, Dear White People, by Justin Simeon. And actually, I put out feelers for Mr. Simeon, young Master Simeon, who is the director of this film. It definitely harkens back to school days, to Do the Right Thing. It definitely has a Spike Lee type of vibe, and it is burning up the internet. I think it has over 500,000 hits to date by way of YouTube. Dear White People. We'll talk about it on the edges, but I think if we're able to get Mr. Simeon himself to talk about this, he could probably do a better job. I can tell you my impressions of the trailer. I can give you my impressions of it. And I will play the trailer in a moment. So we're going to talk about this new Dear White People trailer. And also it's available. You can visually look at it, not only on YouTube, but also at AfroNerd.com. Again, AfroNerd.com. Jerry Sandusky, former Penn State football coach, Jerry Sandusky, was found guilty of 45 out of 48 sexual abuse charges a few days ago. And he's on suicide watch, and appropriately so. Suicide watch. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. Shout out to the late Robin Williams. The late Robin Harris. No sympathy from yours truly. Gotta go, gotta go. Also, we gotta talk about this black female obesity epidemic in the United States. We've talked about it here and there. There's an article, I believe in the New York Times, or it might have been the Washington Post. I'll clear it up in a moment. But an article that focused on black female obesity a few months ago. I think we should revisit it. And dovetailing off of that, there's a 64-year-old female bodybuilding phenom that the Huffington Post covered, I believe, yesterday. She is in phenomenal shape, folks. 64 years of age. There's actually a woman that's older than her that's 74. That's also in phenomenal shape. But the 64-year-old got a little bit of shine in the last few days. Unquestionably the antithesis of the obese female stereotype. You've got to get in gear, folks. The captain knows I'm going through a process myself. I'm taking my Wakandan herbs. I'm doing the Chris Evans workout, the Captain America style cybergenics deal. So I'm on my way. Although I'm not obese, I just don't want to be a slob. I just don't want to be a slob, Captain. You know it. I can't handle that. And lastly, if time permits, I want to talk about another Huffington Post piece that talks about initiatives geared to address the education achievement gap pertaining to low-income students, black and white, brown and white, black, brown, white versus yellow. What's up? Okay, Captain, I want to go to this Dear White People piece. I was a little disturbed by it, honestly. I know Sergio Mims, our friend from Chi-Town, he already had it on his blog about 2 weeks ago. Unbeknownst to me, I wasn't aware of it, but I see that in the last couple of days, it's really picked up some steam. He's definitely, again, Justin Simeon. He's definitely pricking some folks. He's kind of ticking some people off. Some people are likening this to a type of racism because, again, the title is called Dear White People. But if I can find the clip, folks, you got to listen to this thing. I'll give you my impressions. I'm not really comfortable with it, but I do want to give Mr. Simeon, when he comes through, his judge due. So, he's better off, better prepared to talk about it. But, actually, did you see it? Ron, look for this clip. Captain, did you see this thing?
Absolutely.
I think you know where I'm going to weigh on this.
Jerry, I hope
I'm surprised. That's all I got to say. I hope I'm surprised. Okay, actually, I found it. All right, let's listen to this clip. Let's listen to the clip, Dear White People, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about it. Hold on.
Forget Hollywood. Hollywood and forget Tyler Perry.
Like, can we get a movie with, you know, characters in them instead of stereotypes wrapped up in Christian dogma?
Yo, Lucas, I want my $15 back for Red Tail 2.
Most people are here to see Fang 9. And it's Kelly Rowland in it.
Dear white people, breaking news. The amount of black friends required to not seem racist has now been raised to 2. Sorry, your weed man Tyrone does not count. Dear white people, please stop touching my hair. Does this look like a petting zoo to you?
Hey, biatch. Your hair is so cute. Is it weaved?
Dear white people, listening to Flo Rida does not make you practically black.
What are you doing here?
They want me to do a profile piece on black culture at Manchester.
Of which you are so clearly an expert.
Dear white people, dating a black person doesn't count if it pisses off your parents.
Did you come?
Yeah, you know.
Dear white people.
Sam, your show is racist.
Well, black people can't be racist.
Stop dancing.
Agree to disagree.
Sam, what would you do if someone started to date your black people?
There's no need for it, dear black people. Cops, Fox News, and reality TV let us know exactly what you think of us.
Who's corrupting she is, man?
I don't know. Spike Lee and Oprah had a pissed off baby or something.
Every year we throw a party, and the theme always knocks something inordinately sensitive or otherwise stupid on campus.
Okay, so what's this year's theme?
She's running for house?
Sam White's little movement's been getting a bit out of hand. You'd agree?
Of course. I'm gonna put her down the side.
We do not have a race problem here in Manchester.
Are you even in the Black Student Union?
You think I'm black enough for the union?
There isn't a right way to be black.
What do you want? I want what we always talked about. Wife, kids, I want all of that. I really, really do.
That is our challenge. How to be bigger than black when there is no word for it, when there is no precedent in the culture.
Hey, nigga, what you got on right now?
All right, I'm going to cut it there. I think our audience gets the point. Again, that was the trailer for Dear White People. Definitely check it out. Again, it's at afronerd.com, or simply put in Dear White People in Google or in YouTube. I think to date it has over 660,000 hits, and it's picking up some steam. Now, interesting enough, this is a treatment, more or less. This is a trailer. It is not a full-fledged movie. Mr. Simeon, again, if we're able to get him on the show, I did send out some feelers a few days ago, so hopefully we'll be able to get him on here. He went to a crowdfunding site. I don't think it was Kickstarter. I think another crowdfunding site, and was able to get some money very quickly, in a matter of days. I think he might have put a limit of maybe a 60-day limit, and I think within 3 days he was able to get the money because of the provocative nature of this film. And it does appear to be well made. I mean, for a independent film, it seems to be on target as far as the creativity involved in it. But I'm just wondering if the subject matter isn't dated. I'm not sure. In all fairness, based on what I've read from him personally online, he says that, you know, it's called Dear White People. It will give the impression that it's black versus white, but it's more of, again, coming from him, it's more of whites in the background and blacks dealing with each other based on the circumstances that they're in. It takes place at a fictional Ivy League school, and you have this contrast between black and white and some cultural issues that are going on. But it does remind one of someone who definitely studied under Spike Lee. Any thoughts on this, Captain?
Okay, the first thing that I would like to say is that we should support something like this. We talk about different lanes. You have what Tyler Perry's doing. You have what Spike Lee does. And this is something that's a little bit off to the side, but seems like underneath Spike Lee in his early days. So this is something that we definitely want to support. Now, that being said, it seems like at a glance there's a little bit of victimization going on with this. That's at a glance. Now, this is what I want to say. They say, according to the Census Bureau, that there's 40 million black people here. Take 10% of that is 4 million. You split that, okay, gives you 5% is 2 million, okay? You have 2 million people. That's all you need, 2 million people. And that could support you. 2 million black people can support you, meaning which putting out a movie. Okay? If you could get together, let's say, $250,000, put together a decent independent movie, put maybe, you know, some money behind it to promote it, and you can get 2 million people to support you. Let's say it was straight to DVD. This is if all 40 million of us were conscious, but if we were all conscious, we wouldn't necessarily be in the situation that we were in now. Now, that being said, that would be $14 million that you could make in a quarter, all right? That's the gross. The store is going to make their money, take that off. Also, distributor, you just made $5 million back for yourself. Do that every quarter. That's $20 million. You have a business. You understand? And then from there, you can turn around and flip it and make bigger and bigger moves. You don't have to ask anybody for anything. The black community definitely can do that at this given point. You don't have to go to Hollywood and say, you need this kind of movie made. You don't need to do that anymore. You don't need to do that anymore. That money, that kind of money to do that, that initiative is in the black community. If you want to do, let's say, a $200 million budget and have Hollywood push it out, that money might not necessarily be there. But some would say that money is there too. But that's a lot of money. But to do that, what I just mentioned, you don't need a lot. The black community definitely can do that and build themselves up and build up their image and make different lanes, different things. It don't all have to be Tyler Perry. It don't have to be Spike Lee. It could be sci-fi. It could be horror. It could be anything now because the community supports it. And as the community supports it, sooner or later, one of those films, just like anything else, just like when we used to back in the day with rap, put out an independent record, sooner or later it'll cross over and it'll do big things. And then you have some one of your products running away. Oh, this one here generated $40, $50 million. Let's go ahead and put this one out. That's how it works. So the victimization thing at this point, uh-uh. But that's at a glance. There might be more to this at this given point. That's just how I feel. Back over to you, Seraphim Nerd.
Yeah, I do agree with you in one instance about the need. Listen, I will support this. There's a need for a film like this. Even in the intro, where you have these students at a ticket seller, if you actually look at the visually, they're about to enter a movie theater, and they're at the ticket counter speaking to the ticket guy. You know, again, when you think about addressing something, I mean, the title is very provocative. I mean, the title is definitely going to put your butt in the seats. The provocative title, and actually addressing white folk as if you are addressing your former master, is problematic for me. So hopefully this movie will not be that. But based on what I saw as the intro, I just saw the trailer. He's getting money to do this, I guess, in its entirety. It's more about putting the idea out there, but I like what I'm seeing thus far to a certain degree because it's slightly different. At least it's not akin to what they were complaining about. One of the characters, if the listening audience remembers, said something about, you know, mentioned Tyler Perry and movies wrapped in Christian dogma. I mean, you know something? That's a legitimate complaint. My problem is, do you address white folk and do you expect them actually to respect you? On premise, Captain. On premise. I mean, you know what really came to my mind? Stop it. Stop whining. Stop it. It sounds crazy. Mr. White Man, I want you to respect me. I want this. It sounds like you're literally talking to Saint Nick. I want this under my Christmas tree. I want that under my Christmas tree. I want, it's like a child asking for all these things for December 25th. On his premise, Captain, to ask, dear Mr. White Man, I want a 10-speed bicycle. I want a new Xbox, and I want the latest PlayStation. That's how it comes off. But you're asking the people in power, and in quotes, You're asking the people in power to respect you. Let me give you these folks a clue. They're never going to get your story right. Even when they decide to tell your story, just think of the premise. You're asking them to tell your story. You expect that story to be told correctly. Logically, the logic, the numbers, the math, they don't work. And that's what makes it problematic for me. Now, all due respect to Mr. Simeon, because we do want this young filmmaker to come to our show. We're going to be treated respectfully. And again, we're going to give him the courtesy of completion. He's going to tell us what the movie is about. But when you look at this with all these complaints and expecting white folks to get your story right and expecting them to tell your story, sounds crazy. You're supposed to have your own infrastructure in place to entertain and educate your own people. Every other ethnicity has their own thing going on. Hell, there are other black folks referencing Nollywood. There are other black folks that are getting it right. They're doing it for themselves. We're the only ones that still have this paternal, patriarchal relationship with white people and actually expect them to tell your story the right way or tell your story at all. You know, we skipped a couple of stories, Captain, where there are other folks that were mad because they weren't included in white folks' reindeer games. They get mad because, well, there's too many white folks in this show. We demand that he have some black representation. I don't know if that's going to work anymore. I don't know if that's the right way to do it. I mean, as much as I'm not a fan of Tyler Perry, Tyler Perry does have his own studio.
Absolutely.
You know, he's doing his own style. He's in the minstrel business. That's what he wants to do. There's nothing stopping black folks to get together to decide to make films. Hell, we should have several black sci-fi studios, black horror studios, black dramas. There should be a plethora of different creative outlets by black folk. Considering the kind of money that black folks spend, we should stop asking for white people to respect you or expect them to respect your image. They're not going to do it. Heck, you have your own. We complain all the time. We have black folks that are in on disrespecting you because there's so much money. There's so much money in black disrespect that black folks are even involved in it. Any thoughts, Captain, before we move along?
Well, well said. You know, I essentially said it in the beginning, and you said a lot, too. You piggybacked off of that and expanded the situation. I don't think there's anything more really to say about it. Just to move on to the next topic.
Yeah, we're going to go to another topic, and then I think we'll go to a musical break. Let's go into it because of time constraints. Actually, let's talk about Jerry Sandusky.
Whoa.
The hammer was laid down, wasn't it? Former assistant coach from Pennsylvania State University. Excuse me. Under Joe Pa, the late Joe Paterno, under him. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure that our listenership, if they haven't been hiding under a rock, they know about this story. It's a story that's been going on for a little more than a decade. And as far as the actual occurrences, and we're just finding out within the last couple of years that this coach had free rein to abuse young boys under his purview. So, I mean, listen, there were so many victims in this, Captain. I was saying to myself, there's no way they're going to be able to. This is just a formality. There's sometimes you just have, I mean, even his own adopted son came out and said, oh, yeah, he abused me also. There's too many people involved in this for everybody to have some mass hallucination that they were buggered. Some mass hallucination buggery thing going on. It's just impossible. This guy was unabashedly guilty. So now he's on suicide watch. And, you know, we're hearing more and more stories of men diddling boys. It's very disturbing. This is something that, you know, I will say that some folks have called our show to task because we talk about black folk and black dysfunctionalism. this is, I mean, listen, this goes, this is cross-racial also, but there's an awful lot of white males. Now, we can talk about black male or black folk dysfunctionalism. On the flip side, they need to get into this. This is a major deal, Captain. There's pictures that are being exchanged. There's a whole underground international child sex trafficking, child abuse industry that no one, I guess for obvious reasons, wants to talk about. It is horrific. When you hear these stories, there's more. Listen, there's more to the Sandusky story that was implied when it first broke that for some reason we're not hearing about. There was a lot of people that knew about this man's misdeeds and reported it. Listen, if anyone, thank God I didn't see this, because to visualize this, to come upon something like this is a horror show. But beyond that, to report it and then not to check back, which was a critique of the late Joe Paterno, that he was aware of it and that he did not check back to see what happened to Mr. Sandusky, that was troubling. There's a certain level of nonchalance, a certain level of, dare I say, acceptance of this behavior that's troubling. And it's implications that this goes higher up in the administration of Penn State. So I know if I had a degree from Penn State, I would be concerned, because it was such a big scandal, Captain, that it has so many implications. It wasn't just a section off kind of thing. This thing, when they started digging in deep, appeared to go up higher and higher and higher, the upper echelons of Penn State's hierarchy. Somewhat accepted. Any thoughts on this?
Well, listen up, folks. Now listen carefully. Presidents, CEOs, VPs, Catholic priests, people that own big business, that make a lot of money, they commit crimes. They commit a lot of crimes, and they're able to get away with crimes, and they're able to go on and on with their crimes. You know why? You scrutinize the street black. You'll scrutinize the street Latin. You'll scrutinize the street white. You'll scrutinize the street Asian. But the upper-tier person, you automatically give them a pass. The best people in society, you don't scrutinize them. You just give them a pass. That's what you do. Because in your mind, that's not the criminal. Everything happens top-down. The reason why people that we have, the society that we have, yes, there's impoverished situations, yes. But you step into any mailroom in any company, you might not be able to see what the CEO is doing. But if that mailroom is chaotic, and you can see the mailroom, rest assured the top of that company is also chaotic, because the bottom is the reflection of the top is a reflection of the bottom. Our society has these problems because the people at the top, their heads are not right. They're doing things. They're hiding things. But because of prestige, you give them a pass. Now you say, what the hell is the captain talking about? Okay. If Jerry Sandusky, now I'm going to call it out now, if he was a black man, how long would he have been able to carry this on? Maybe 2 years? Maybe a year? He went on with this for 10 years. If he was a dark Latin, how long would he have been able to carry this on with? Okay? You're going to scrutinize those particular individuals just a lot more, and you're going to see them. If you have your child, you see the person coming with the do-rag, he's not watching my child. But the person with the PhD, and that normally is the person that you're going to let down your guard with. The person with a whole lot of money, you say, yeah, go take Johnny. Johnny comes home crying or whatever. You say, no, there's nothing happened. Maybe something happened somewhere else. He would never do that. That's the mentality. That's why these individuals can carry on so long. That's why everybody looks the opposite way. Penn State is huge. A lot of money being made, a lot of wins going on, happy atmosphere. So So people just turn their back. No, this can't be happening. This will bring down the whole organization. It'll bring down the whole organization, and it'll also bring down the other people's gravy train, their legacy. So they look the other way. That's why this type of foolishness, this monstrous, crazy behavior happens. And this is children we're dealing with. It's not adults. This is children. Someone who does not have a fighting chance. And this is what we do in this society here. Start looking top down. Certain things go bottom up. Do your ABCs, you start from the bottom. And go from 1 to 10, you have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and go all the way up. But some things are top down. If you have an organization and it's not doing well, what do? They come and get rid of the CEO, get rid of the president, get rid of the VP, and then they bring in a new batch of people, CEOs, president, VPs, and they say, okay, you guys go ahead, run the company. And then what do these people do? They enforce their will top down on the rest of the company, and whoever does not conform to their will, they get rid of them. So in essence, the company starts doing well now because they went top down. In this society here, United States, Europe, just think about it. Just think about it. Maybe we need a different kind of society where we scrutinize the top the same way we scrutinize the bottom. So this type of foolishness does not happen. Back over to you, Seraph Lanier.
Yeah, we're going to go to a musical break. I do want to mention one thing, Captain. What you said was right on point as always. But, you know, I want to emphasize something that when we do, especially perhaps overemphasize the quote-unquote street black, street Latin person, when we talk about the street white, the absolute lower tier, when we talk about them and focus on them, it's because the whole notion of the cloak of respectability, let me repeat that, the cloak of respectability. I've said on a number of occasions on the show, Captain, that I wouldn't doubt, when we talk about profiling, that when they pull over the quote-unquote lower-tier black person riding in a black mobile, and you know what that is, 24s, 24 rims and a whole thing, a black mobile, your do-rag, your double earrings, you have your seat all the way down, so your seat laid back, the whole thing. When you conform to that stereotype, you relinquish any sense of a cloak of respectability. Now, they're pulling you over, whether rightly or wrongly, Captain. They're doing that because you have your clown suit on, just like your forefathers had their zoot suits on. Look up zoot suit. There's a history with zoot suits as well, and how that went down with black and brown men wearing them in the 30s and 40s. That was the precursor or the harbinger to the low-riding pants we see today. Street culture. When you relinquish the cloak of respectability, you bring the attention to yourself. The white person that's in the car next to you could easily have his grandmother's head, her severed head in his trunk. But because he doesn't look like you or doesn't have the air of lower tierism, he's not getting pulled over. Now, many folks have emailed me and they take umbrage with some of these things. They say, I'm being unfair. I go by how things actually operate in this world. I'm not going by theories where, things should be one way. Things need to be this way. Pay close attention to the language, folks. Things need to be, things ought to be, things should be. No. We talk about how things are. You have to deal in the real world. And the real world is that when it comes down to, unfortunately, white skin color privilege, which is a reality, when it comes down to dress, mannerisms, how you convey yourself, your level of comportment, these things have a great deal of – play a great role in how you will ultimately be treated. And, heck, you could have your own grandmother's head. I would not want this to happen, but you could be the killer. But don't look like the killer. That's the issue. It's time to be smarter, folks. Look like a respectable person. You can just go further. And it's not to give a pass to people who are crazy. Jerry Sandusky was and is crazy. But He went, you know, he's 68 years old. Jaquan is 18. You know, there's a difference. All right, Captain, we're going to go to a musical break. When we get back, more discourse. Again, we play the best in urban alternative, Afropunk. This is Room 2012. Room 2012. We'll be back in a few moments. Hold on. Okay, folks, Room 2012, Room 2012, definitely check that out. You can get that for free, actually, a free download at afropunk.com, again, afropunk.com. Just a couple of things I'd like to impart to our audience. For the comic shop, actually, next week's comic shop, we're expecting Mr. Larry Tai, who is an author of a new book about Superman, believe it or not. I mean, it is all things geek. It is under the Afro Nerd umbrella. So if you'd like, please stop by Sunday at 6 our interview with Mr. Larry Tai, not someone to take lightly. He wrote a book on Satchel Paige as well. So he's a person that's all about heroism. So he went from Satchel Paige to Superman, so I find that pretty fascinating. Also, the captain and myself, we're really, really getting energized and trying to push this afternoon thing to the top. and we're working hard to get some phenomenal interviews, some phenomenal guests. So I'm trying hard to get Stanley Crouch. I've been trying for years, but I actually got some leeways to get Stanley Crouch. And a lot of names have been thrown into the hat that we've been putting some feelers out there. Diane Carroll, Aisha Tyler, Henry Louis Gates. There's quite a few people that we're just throwing out the whole shebang to get the best for our audience. So we're going to really try to speed the process up a little bit. So stay tuned, continue to listen. I assure you there's a lot more coming down as far as our guests, a lot of high-profile guests, actually. So that's just a few. I didn't even name all of them. Colin Powell we even reached out to. So we're trying to get the very best, really trying to do it up big. We wouldn't be AfroNerd unless we try to get some of these folks to come on. So it should be pretty interesting. You only got about 8 minutes remaining, Captain, so I do want to touch on this issue of obesity in the black community. And to be fair, if you look at it in the macrocosm, this country, the United States, is grotesquely obese. The country is, cross-racially. But then when you look at it in the microcosm, black women, brown women second, are tragically obese. We're talking about billions, somewhere near $180, $170 billion a year. These figures are spent on diabetes-related illnesses in this country alone. And, you know, it's overtaking smoking and cancer in the death rate. So obesity is a big deal. And I dare I say some of it is a cultural thing with us. I think some of our men are encouraging our women to be big. Some of us are lying to our women. You know, there's a thing about being thick, quote-unquote, big-boned, and then there's obesity. We have some women who are delusional, that are blatantly obese, but will tell you, I'm big-boned. And we've seen this before, but it is a major deal. And I guess I take it personally because we know our abilities. We have it in our DNA. The black body is a controversial, has been controversial since we were brought over here in the hulls of slave ships, Captain. The black body has been controversial. So, you know, we know what we can look like, and this obesity thing is not the way. Now, to dovetail off of that, again, this is from a May 2012 issue. I mean, it's been talked about all over the place, but a May article, op-ed article in the New York Times. But the Huffington Post also highlighted a woman by the name of Ruby Carter Pikes. Ruby Carter Pikes, 64 years of age, who is in phenomenal shape. She's a grandmother who is ripped to I don't know what. I'm envious of this woman's physique. So, I mean, it's within our ability, even in advanced age, to have it going on. So why aren't we? Why are we stuck in making excuses? And you know, there's an element of course, pleasing the male eye for a woman to look a certain way. Even taking that into account, Captain, it's about health now. Forget about what myself or what the captain might like to look at. Even if you catch my eye to the female listeners, forget about me. Be concerned about your health. The male attraction is secondary to being able to live, breathe, move about without difficulty, free from dis-ease. Captain, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's two main factors that's going on at this given time. I think it's part cultural. It's probably a bit more cultural than it is poverty, but poverty also plays a role in it because based on statistical analysis, richer people are healthier. Impoverished people have a tendency to be more obese. They eat cheaper food. They eat the type of food that will push you over the edge. You know, a lot of sodas, a lot of bad food in general, because the bad food is cheaper. The good stuff costs more money. And, you know, if you just look at your day-to-day, look at my day-to-day, gym membership is $400 and up for the year. You have to have money to do that, not necessarily have a lot of money, but you have to have some form of disposable income. If you're at the poverty level, you can't do that. Now, that addresses the financial, but it doesn't cost you anything from a cultural standpoint to take an hour walk, especially if you're home just sitting around not doing anything. Okay, you can do that. You can walk around for an hour when your lazy self is on your cell phone all day long or sitting home not doing anything, not working, not trying to look for a job or anything else. You understand? So you can go walking, but that's cultural. You understand? That has to be a cultural change. So you have to adapt those type of means. So it's both on both sides. That's what leads to this type of situation. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, you know, I guess I take this, as I mentioned before, I take this a little bit more seriously because, you know, you and I are both in the gym, and it's not easy. You know, it is not easy. I mean, I've been in the gym anyway, but now I decided to take it up a notch with this Cybergenics program, and it's an old-school program. I did it before. It worked before, and I decided to do it again. It's a 60-day program where you really go to the hilt. You go to exhaustion. There's no such thing as doing just 10 repetitions and that's it. If you can physically do 15, 17, 18 reps, then you do that. You do it to exhaustion. It's a very intense program, but the results speak for themselves. So I'm not going to lie to our listeners and say that physical fitness is an easy thing. But I tell you the results, being able to move about in your daily life, if you're a physically fit person, is something not to take for granted. Being able to walk around, being able to just, you know, move about, it's not a big deal for me at this stage in the game. But I see people, teenagers, who are obese, who can't walk up a flight of stairs, Captain. I run up a flight of stairs on purpose. I run up a flight of stairs. That's just my personality. I don't walk. I run. The Oracle, my father, he runs up a flight of stairs. That's just his personality. He's just not, you know, that slow-moving, mature person. It doesn't work like that. A lot of it is a mental game that we play with ourselves. We have a mental game, a mental defeatist, self-defeatist strategy that works on us, and it's working to our detriment, even in the health game. So I implore our listeners, I implore our beautiful black women, and listen to everybody. There's some obese brothers also, but the stats are not favorable towards women of color and weight. And to be honest with you, we see the results. We see some issues. We see some cases where women were obese. They pretend that, oh, I love myself, but when they actually lose the weight, they really love themselves. We see what goes on. I've seen it when those women can fit into certain clothes and they know they, quote-unquote, have it going on. They're real with it. So we got to stop pretending that this is the ideal way you want to be. We know what you want to be. We all know where we want to be and what we want to be. Then let's do it. We'll have to revisit this again, Captain. We've got about a minute remaining. Folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll be back again for the Midweek in Review. Stay tuned for more shows, as I alluded to. We'll have more guests, I assure you. We're trying to give you the best that we can give you. Any thoughts, Captain, before we get on up out of here?
Start walking. Doesn't take any money. Just have to pick your feet up and you begin to walk. If you're just laying around, you automatically begin to lose weight. It's real easy, real easy. Leave the car at home and just do a little walking. There you have it.
Okay. Been an absolute pleasure. This is D'Angelo, who's back on the scene and back in shape. He was a slob, too. He's back in shape. D'Angelo, the Black Hole Sun, a cover. We'll be back next Wednesday. See you guys.